We can have a dream, we can have an idea that's in our head and turn it into our wildest dreams. We can make millions, billions of dollars and create something from nothing. This is for the young person out there that's trying to make it. Instead of having to learn everything yourself, find somebody who's in your field or somebody who's already done very well and spend as much time and add as much value as you can to these people.
You're exactly where you need to be and love yourself, because often we're very hard on ourselves. We're so difficult on ourselves.
So love yourself. Appreciate yourself. You're exactly where you need to be, and figuring out your next moves is going to be the real journey. When people think about Dubai, they see the skyscrapers, the fancy buildings, all the luxury things. But when I see Dubai, I see opportunity. I see a city that was built from nothing, built on vision, and built from sand to what it is now, 30, 40 plus years later.
What about if someone just wants this financial freedom? What's their first step?
All right, we're here with another episode with a special guest that we have here, and he is Adam Nasser. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Assalamu alaikum, my brother.
Wa alaikum assalam. Now, for the audience that are listening right now, for those who don't know you, who is Adam?
Good question, brother. Adam is many things. I've been many men in my past. I mean, I have somebody that's changing constantly throughout life. I was very blessed with a very difficult past, a difficult life. I'm very fortunate to be here now recording this podcast here with you today in Dubai. We just met for the first time, so very grateful for that. But Adam is just an evolution, brother. You know, just constantly evolving yourself. I was dealt very bad cards early on in my life, but just never gave up. Somebody that was constantly seeking growth, seeking a future, and constantly every single year refining and changing yourself. And that's why today you might see me with this stick here. You're probably wondering, what the hell is this stick? This is a representation. And Nasser is my last name, which I see in Arabic means eagle. And this bird is a very strong representation of who I am and the man that I've built. So Adam is just a person that I've built over many years and refined to the person that I am today, now living here and shooting this podcast.
What do you do exactly? I remember that you said something about having a $50 million worth of a tech company.
Yeah.
What is it all about?
Yeah. So I do put that out there on Instagram just because, you know, you're getting some more attention online nowadays. So you kind of have to put those figures out. So otherwise I wouldn't share that as publicly. But I'm a retired CEO of a tech company. I don't have any tech background prior to building that tech company. I was always an entrepreneur.
So everything. We had no background at all.
Zero tech background, zero funding, no investors. Essentially, I'm just somebody who, I'm a problem solver. I'm a master problem solver. And this is a trait that I built over a long period of time, which is the ability to assess the largest problems out there and then build the most efficient and simple solution for that problem. So this actually dates back in the US. I was a hungry kid. I was still trying to make my way up, and you know, even in the early stage, I was working at McDonald's at 15. In my 20s, I was doing real estate. So I was buying foreclosed and distressed properties in the USA, you know, buying them for $100K, fixing them up and trying to sell it for $150, $200, making a little, you know, some margin in between. So I did that for about 6 years, and I found an opportunity in this industry, in this specific niche, to solve a problem for, you know, this industry. And I basically went online and I built a tool to solve my own problem, to get a, you know, an advantage over my competitors. And it actually worked really well for my own business. And then I had the clever idea of, instead of using it just for my own business, why don't I sell this to my competitors and sell this to the, you know, my niche? And that's when it took off, and I went down the tech path. And before you know it, you had 60 employees and, you know, $50 million valuation roughly, and retiring as a CEO last year.
How old are you right now?
36.
MashaAllah. So you're retiring at 36 years old.
Indeed. I got my stick here for that. Yeah.
That's not even like, there's not a lot of people that could say that. That's like an accomplishment that you have the desire and the capability to retire at 36 year old. Now, we'll go more on the business side. But the thing is that I've noticed that not everyone can become an entrepreneur. Do you believe that?
I 100% believe that, yes. Yeah.
And why is that? Why do you think there's so many people out there that just potentially can't become a business person?
Good question. That'd be a good question. I mean, you know, either you have it or you don't. either you have this entrepreneurship blood, this trait, or you don't. And, you know, this skill can be built over a long period of time. You can evolve your skills, but some people just don't have this ability and this awareness to solve problems. So, yeah, I mean, I think not everybody's cut out for it, to be honest.
And what was the turning point that made you want to become an entrepreneur?
You know, seeing your family not thrive, you know, even at the earliest stages, when you're a young boy, you have these visions. You know, I remember writing my mom a letter at 10 years old when we first moved to the USA. Mom, one day I'm going to buy you a house. I'm going to be successful. I'm going to take care of you. And inshallah, now is that time. I'm buying my mom an apartment here in the Palm.
Nice.
She doesn't really know all the details about it yet. So fully
surprise.
Full surprise. And 20 plus years later, 20, 30 years later, making good on that promise. But that was the drive, being a, you know, at the early stages, being a provider for your family, being somebody that can create generational wealth and be a leader. You know, this was the early drive, and also enjoying the life that you feel like you deserve as well.
I believe that a lot of people that do become entrepreneurs, they usually have hardships and pain. I was speaking to Giuliano, your friend. Yeah. And so he was telling me about that there's a lot of pain that makes you go into uncomfortable places. When you're comfortable, you never want to get out of that comfort zone. But when you feel that you're struggling, you have some sort of type of pain in your life, it pressures you to move out of that comfort zone to just try to achieve what you're trying to achieve.
Yes. Yes. It's a fire, brother. Like it just gives you that fuel. Like I really do believe it. Like you have it or you don't in certain skill sets, like just how you're genetically inclined. But your fire comes from your situation. If you had a tough past, you look at immigrants as a great example. Some of the most successful people are generally from, you know, foreign countries. They have this fire. They have this motivation. So I use it, like I see that as one of the biggest gifts. Being dealt a bad hand, having a rough situation, a rough time is honestly one of the biggest gifts. And it's very unfortunate that people don't look at it for the opportunity that it is. Because a tough time, a bad situation, really and genuinely, as cliche as that sounds, is a gift. And if you reframe your mind to seeing this as an opportunity, it can create a world of opportunity and gifts for you in your life. And that's what I was able to do in my life.
It's interesting that you pointed out that you reframe your mind. So let's talk about what was that one personal challenge that changed your mindset to want to becoming successful, other than buying for your mom, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, brother, I don't talk about this very often publicly, but I was abused for 10 years of my life. I lived in jail for 10 years between the ages of 8 to 18 at home from a stepfather who abused both me and my mother. And it was an extremely difficult part of my life. Imagine being your childhood stolen from you. You know, and, you know, you just want to smile and laugh and joy and, you know, have a personality, have friends. And for 10 years, I'd come home and I was yelled at every single day. I was abused for 10 years. I mean, this is 8 to 18. This is a really tough time. And that translated to being really bullied at school, having no confidence. I mean, I was below everyone else in terms of the start that everyone else is privileged with. This was, I think, a motivation. But this was built enough of the fire within me to say, you know what, I don't deserve this. You know, I could give up. Of course, in this time, you have thoughts of, okay, I hate myself, or I want to even kill myself. You had these thoughts, you know.
You use that energy to build something better for yourself.
Yeah.
Which is not many people do.
Yes.
So if it's someone is like struggling right now and he's part of the audience, what would you say to him or her?
Brother, I understand you. If you're watching, I understand you so deeply, and no matter as hard as it is, you might feel lonely. I promise you, spend an extra day. The clouds will pass. Find really good people who support you, who can push you through this moment, and really believe in yourself. Really, to the core, believe in yourself. Because these days will pass, and there'll be a day you look back on these days, and you'll be thankful that you weathered the storm.
One interesting thing that you just pointed out, that you look back on the past and you're thankful for it, that it happened.
Yes.
Because it wouldn't have gotten you to where you are today if it wasn't for those painful moments.
Yes.
Steve Jobs has mentioned something about connecting the dots, that you cannot connect the dots in the present moment. But when you look back, you can see how all these dots got you to the place that you are here today.
Amen to that. Yeah, very, very much believe in it. You know, like, I'm grateful. Like, you're grateful for all the little things. Like, the job at McDonald's led to the job selling cell phones. The job selling cell phones led to, you know, the job selling cars. And then selling cars led to real estate. Real estate led to building a tech company, moving internationally. And then every little thing, it just, you might not get paid for it in the large ways initially, but if you spot the opportunity, you can connect the dot to the next larger opportunity.
It's like each chapter of your life built a certain skill.
Yes.
That got you to the place where you build a massive fortune.
100%.
Yeah. 100%. Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yes.
But what is the, like, the biggest lie people say about success or believe about success?
The biggest lie that people say and believe about success, the biggest lie people believe about success is that it's about the money and it's about who you are in this moment. And it's not true. It's about who you're becoming. And it's the growth at every different level of your own evolution. So I firmly believe it's not about who you are at the moment. It's just who you're becoming. And the money is just only a representation. The money isn't the only metric to keep score. So I encourage young guys out there to not just focus on money, but focus on skills acquisition, focusing on becoming a better man or woman, becoming a better person for society, becoming more respected, and evolving week by week, month by month. And you can do that through self-reflection, assessing how you've grown every single month. I have a personal practice at the end of every single week. I look at every single thing I did, even this podcast right now. I'm going to go back and review, what did I do well? What could have I improved? And refining every single week. And before you know it, after several months and years, you refine yourself to a very high level. So chase progress, not so much just cash and temporary things.
Very true. Sound advice, because even to myself, I don't look into how much money I got every day, or rather how many percentage of improvement 100%. I have done every day. If I can improve 1% every day, and you calculate this percentage throughout the whole year, that 365% better version of me than who I am.
Good on you for doing this podcast. Like, you're keeping yourself around. This is such a smart chess move. I'm thinking about doing something very similar, because you're keeping yourself around high frequency players. You're forced to have a great conversation. I mean, it's a good conversation, but you're putting yourself, when you're having really high level conversations, and it's forcing yourself to grow just by being in that frequency.
And even, like they say, I went to Tony Robbins once.
Oh, I've been to all his seminars. Really? Are you all right? I've taken all my friends, Date with Destiny.
So you went Date with Destiny, the Business Mastery, I think. And what was it called? The first one? At least the power within.
Yeah,
that's the one that I went for it.
Yeah.
And he used to say this constantly. You're the average of the people you surround yourself with. So if you surround yourself with people who are business oriented, they're very ambitious, you bet you got to have to be like them or you can't be with them.
100%.
So I thought that was really true. It's really true. Every billionaire, as you see, they spend time with the billionaires. You see multimillionaires spending time with the multimillionaires.
Yes.
You see the athletes spending their time with other athletes.
Correct.
It's very true.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very powerful advice, that everyone, if they strive to be something that they are not yet, try to, in some way or form, add value in order to join those groups and get to learn from them.
You know, this is why I love this, use a point here. I love symbolism in my life. And you see this beautiful animal here. This eagle is a perfect representation of that. Because when we think of an eagle, it's, you know, the most high bird in the species. Now, eagles obviously only hang out with other eagles. You never see it come down and hang out with a pigeon, right? It's only with its tribe.
Do you think they belong in a group? Because usually I feel like they're more individual. They're separate.
In some ways, but yeah, they're separate. But when they associate with other eagles.
True.
You know, they have their time alone. But I think maybe for representative for that too. It's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, they do spend a lot of time alone. But if they do spend time in groups, it's
but that's a good thing, because you need to spend the time alone as well.
Yes.
You shouldn't always rely that everyone's going to be around you.
Yes.
Sometimes being alone, you have a lot of time to self-reflect.
Correct.
On what you do.
Yes.
And if you self-reflect a lot, you know what next steps you need to take. you're not looking to be reactive, but rather be proactive.
Yes.
When you're around people, they're like, okay, what is he doing? Let me do as well. What is that? Mm. Maybe the things that you're doing is maybe wrong. Maybe you have another way you can strive to be a better person. You never know. Now, going on to all this, why did he choose Dubai as a place to retire and be?
You know, so when people think about Dubai, they see the skyscrapers, the fancy buildings, all the luxury things. But when I see Dubai, I see opportunity. I see a city that was built from nothing, built on vision, and built from sand to what it is now, 30, 40 plus years later. And this is a representation for entrepreneurs. Dubai is a representation for me, for entrepreneurs, for us as starting businesses. We can have a dream, we can have an idea that's in our head and turn it into our wildest dreams. We can make millions, billions of dollars and create something from nothing. And it's from the very simple philosophy and idea of what Dubai is a perfect representation for us as business people and entrepreneurs in this city.
Many other people would suggest that they would rather go to Hong Kong, Singapore, or even New York City.
Mm. Great cities, by the way.
So what do you think of them compared to Dubai?
Ah, man, you typically get, like, with Dubai, you get the same edge. It's safe, it's clean, so I'm not going to bore you with all the simple stuff. But for me, I chose Dubai. I was an American citizen before. I recently renounced my U.S. citizenship. I canceled my U.S. citizenship, as crazy as that sounds.
Wow.
And I love America for what it stood for, and even under the current president, seemed very big fan of it. Haven't spent time in Hong Kong. I'm not really familiar there. But Dubai for me is obviously all the obvious things, clean and safe. But when you're successful, they roll down the red carpet for you. Here, they really make sure that if you're winning, yes, sir, how are you? They want you to win. They want you to smile. They roll down the red carpet and make you feel like a celebrity, and they make you feel special for being successful.
Very welcomed.
And rewarded for the hard work
to get here.
First sure. is, oh, you're doing well. And they kind of like low-key jealous for your success.
Like, I don't know if you heard about the UFC fighter. I can't remember his name.
Khamzat?
Yeah, Khamzat.
Yeah,
he just got his citizenship. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
So people at a high level who contribute so much, whether to the country or to whatever they do, they get rewarded here.
Yes.
That's for sure. And if you're a person of value, then you can definitely get rewarded here a lot more than anywhere else.
Inshallah.
Now, what about networking in Dubai compared to the rest of the world? Behind the scenes, we're talking about how the city can sometimes be lonely for new people coming here. What's your thought on your experience being here in Dubai for the first time?
Yeah, when it comes to networking, I mean, I think finding your tribe is very critical. This whole lone wolf thing just doesn't work. You know, you can do it, but you're going to run out of steam, and you need people that are on your squad, that are finding opportunities, that are creating value in some way. So find, like, really find your tribe. No matter what level you're at, there's people on your level that want to rise up, right? And in Dubai, it's filled with really talented and smart people. And you know, go to the right places, like finding those places that are a match at on an energy frequency for attracting the people you want, whether that's a business partner or a friend or like a relationship, whatever the case may be, going to the places that are aligned with the kind of frequency people that you want. And then just finding your tribe. And then once you find your tribe, you win together. I'm a big believer in that.
Which places were like right here in Dubai that you thought was a good place to recommend?
Yeah. I'm part of a private members club. I'm part of NIRA members club.
NIRA.
Very similar to Arts Club here in Dubai.
Okay.
So I hang out there. We just had a polo event yesterday, like watching the polo races. It's successful people doing well. Everybody's very friendly. They're open to sharing their ideas. Would love to invite you actually one day for coffee. It'd be honored to have you.
That would be a pleasure. Just like when it comes to those type of like exclusive clubs.
Yeah.
What is the criteria to get in?
At least for me, I don't know. I got right in, but I don't know if they're so how deeply they're selecting. But there's a member's fee to get in, and I think you have they're just gonna make sure that you're not a fit in the sense that, like, I don't know, you're not like some scammer online or something like that.
For sure. How do you gauge? Because, like, let's say you go into a place, you're getting to meet a certain people. There could be a tension for a lot of people getting into those clubs or getting to this just to leverage and rather than give value, receive value.
Extract, yes.
Transaction.
Yes.
More so.
100%.
So how do you ensure that this doesn't happen, or how do you ensure that this person is not trying to just get something from you?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, as an organization, I mean, I'm not involved in an organization outside of just being a member, but as an organization, I think you do have to vet the people that are coming into any organization to make sure that you have people that are there for a win-win. Some level of trying to receive value is fine. But if you sign someone who's egregiously trying to extract value, I think you have to vet that in any organization. But also personally speaking, you know, personally, we have our own core principles, and you're very attuned and aware of people that are obviously trying to extract more value from you, you know, and you can tell from just social intelligence. You meet with somebody and you can tell like that they're continuing the conversation way longer, and then there's a hint of, hey, maybe there's an investment that you need to be doing, or like some kind of hidden agenda. So when I feel that, I kind of distance myself from X people. And just having that social awareness to be aware of, is there some kind of agenda on this person, and then distancing yourself from it a bit. So just social awareness goes a long way.
So for some of those clubs, it might be very exclusive. What about if someone is very just young? He's going to start his life right here in Dubai.
Yeah.
What would you recommend him?
Oh, this is good advice, brother. So this is for the young person out there that's trying to make it. I understand them so well. I understand very, very well what it's like. Now, my best advice is meet as many people as possible. The top of the funnel, right? Make that top of funnel as big as freaking possible and find those people that are worth following deeply.
Where exactly?
Where do you find them? Okay, well, figuring out the places they hang out, right? Figuring out the places that you can meet really high quality people. They might not be hanging out at Starbucks, right? So finding out those spots, even if you have to pay, or find a way to get into those places and meet those people. Once you meet them, test them. Test and test and really verify that person is really about what they're about. Is it just their nice Lambo or Ferrari, or are they the real deal? You know, spend time and getting to know them is very, very important. And then once you test them, figure out how to add as much value as possible to their life. You know, for example, I have my videographer here right now. He's filming. And he's my videographer, but I'm also teaching him to add as much value to my life as possible. Don't just, we're shooting videos, great. But then, okay, you know, find ways we can find opportunities, find cool events we can go to, add more value. And then, you know, naturally, I think with a good person, they'll reciprocate this.
There's an interesting question for your videographer, but I'm going to ask you, how did he find you?
How did he find me?
Or did you find him?
We met just kind of by fate, actually. I met my videographer through a trip that we were both on at the same time.
Okay.
He was freelancing, doing videos, and I was a guest. And we just met. We had a good connection.
Right.
And now we're here in Dubai shooting videos.
So it was through that mutual friend's connection that you will be able to connect.
Indeed. But that's my best advice. My best advice with young people is, instead of having to learn everything yourself, find somebody who's in your field or somebody who's already done very well, and spend as much time and add as much value as you can to these people.
Sound advice.
Yeah.
What about in terms now of your business? Now, your business is called Smarter Contact.
Smarter Contact. I'm glad you pronounced it correctly, because a lot of crypto guys call it Smarter Contract, and it pisses me off.
Because that sounds more like a blockchain type.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why they're connected with that. So what is it about?
Yep. So smartercontact.com, we're a B2B SaaS platform. SaaS stands for subscription as a service. So just like Netflix, you pay $10 a month to subscribe. Ours is a bit more expensive. But basically, it's an SMS marketing software and CRM. So if you have a large list of contacts, so say 1,000 people or 10,000 or 100,000, you can send them all a text message blast for, you know, X service or whatever the case may be. So just think about email marketing, but for text with a CRM and voice features. And
you mean like text, like an iMessage, SMS style?
Yeah. Okay. Like, hey, Hamid, I want to buy your property at insert address. Like, hey, John, hey, Bob, want to buy a property at 123 Main Street. And we started as a solution for real estate, which was my background. So understanding a niche, I understood the niche very well. I wasn't a software guy. So you don't have to be a guy, you know, this is another misconception, is we were very successful because I understood my customer very well. I understood the problem very well. I wasn't the best engineer. I wasn't the best software guy, no tech background. I just understood my customer so intricately well that I just built them to the best of my ability as a solution to their problem versus the most flashy tech product.
Interesting. So it's more so that you understood the customer journey. Mm. But how do you go about finding...
customer pain point, actually.
All right.
Yeah.
So how do you go about finding the developers to develop your solution?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of trial and error. Fortunately, we live in a world where like everything is online. Mm. So I was in the US. I found an agency in Eastern Europe that built my software. And after COVID was, you know, I realized COVID is bullshit and I was just tired of, you know, sitting at home. And long story with that. But I was like, you know what? Let me fly to East Europe. I had no obligations, no kids. I was single. I was like, all right, well, my team's in Ukraine. Let me fly there. And before you know it, we went from 4 or 5 employees to building a huge office. We had like over 50 employees. And
did you build them over there in their country?
Yeah. So we had a team there in Eastern Europe and some engineers and developed like an office there in Ukraine.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is very interesting in terms of that you try to leverage not developers in the United States, but somewhere outside.
Yeah.
To leverage in terms of the cost of service.
Capital efficiency. We're scrappy because as a tech startup, the costs are crazy. Mm. A U.S. developer is going to want $150,000 U.S.
for sure.
Year. One in Eastern Europe wants $60,000. Like, it's a no-brainer.
For sure. Maybe
two for the same price. And, you know, as an early startup or early business, you have to be scrappy and be efficient with resources.
It's like make it cheap and fail cheap.
Yeah.
Fail quickly so you can learn more and then be able to develop something even better.
Exactly. But I had some lessons learned. There are some really valuable lessons that I learned from this that I think would be super, super valuable to share while on this topic is if you're going to hire cheap, make the strategy expensive. So one of the lessons that I learned is like when I first built it, I was hiring cheap developers to do the architecture and the foundation. Like if you're building a house, one of the most important steps is the design process, where the layouts are of the rooms and this kind of thing. Just giving a simple example. With software, it's like this, but much more complex. And I was hiring like middle level engineers to like build the high level infrastructure. And then once you build it wrong in the beginning, it's just hard to like recorrect later. So I wish I just, kept these guys that I hired, but I hired a really masterful guy that was deeply experienced for maybe 5-10 hours. It's not a big deal. You pay him for their time or even 40 hours for 1 week. And they build the path and the proper infrastructure. And then the more working level guys can build on that journey.
You're not a tech guy. How did you understood that you needed those type of people? How did you understand that I needed an architecture to build the infrastructure of this process and needing this type of developers to make this happen?
Well,
a lot of tech background did you have to know in order to understand what is needed?
Trial and error. I had this a really incredible tool that for some reason a lot of people don't use, and it's called Google. And it blows my mind how people don't use it. We didn't have ChatGPT back.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, like whenever I get stuck, I'd go as deep as possible and solve as far as possible. But then I knew I had one guy who was like a tech founder that I knew and we were good friends. But I didn't want to bother him until I pushed my limit of research as far as I can get. And I was like, I'd be like, hey, bro, his name is Jack. He's a great friend of mine. He built a $20, $30 million software company. I was like, hey, brother, listen, I'm building this. I'm not going to waste your time. Is it okay if I reach out to you once every month with just the high level questions? And he appreciated that I pushed my level of knowledge. I'm not bugging him every freaking 2 days. I pushed it to like wherever I felt like I needed the high level stuff. And I just hit him up. Hey man, like, what would you do here? I'm stuck here. Like 10, 20 minutes and respectful of his time and experience. But personal research goes a long way.
Use Google, my friend.
Mm-hmm. Or now ChatGPT, yeah, for sure.
Or DeepSeek, actually. I'm a big fan of that one, actually.
Well, the interesting thing about DeepSeek right now and OpenAI replicated some of the model of DeepSeek, which had a specific research feature where it can reason and research. Now they did this something, it's called O3 High. They have it, you could try it right now. It's available in OpenAI.
Okay.
So they immediately try to compete with DeepSeek.
Back,
replicate the same model, and now it's right there available in OpenAI.
Interesting.
To know. They're fast, yeah. They're fast. They got to compete in a way, you know? It's like if someone can do it with a $6 million and someone with the billions of dollars worth of infrastructure and everything in terms of the resources they have, they should be able to replicate it.
It's a good source. It's great for early adopters. Where the people like us that are already aware, like you have this advantage, this year or 2 years to take advantage before everyone else is doing it.
For sure. What about in terms of the number one mistake that most entrepreneurs do when they start out? What did you realize about that?
There's so many. You know, and most people look at your success as your greatest gift. And for me, one of my greatest successes is the amount of mistakes that I've made. I've made countless mistakes along the way. And I'm very proud of them, honestly. I'm very proud of them. If I had to give you one mistake that I'm, like, I would say the biggest mistake that I ever made was as the company grew. If we're talking about just in business, as the company grew, I made the mistake of keeping the same level people at the growth stage of the business. So as the company grows, you require different levels of talent. The level of talent is different in year one, year two, year three, year four, between $100,000 a year to $1 million a year, to $10 million a year requires different levels of talent. And I kept my lower level talent as we were growing. And when we saw tremendous growth is when we brought in the very expensive, talent that was commensurate to the level of where the business was.
That is interesting. Usually I think, for example, when it comes to some sort of challenge that you face with this, is it because once you start having the cash flow in, then you start hiring better people? Or is it because the necessity of the business requires you to hire those people? What is it? Is it now because you can now offer what you couldn't offer before, therefore that's why you hire better people? Or is it because now the business demands it so you can scale it up?
Yeah, I mean, it's combination of both. Like the best situation is when you can grow. So somebody grows within the business. This is the best scenario. And their levels and skills grow. Proportionately, their pay increases as well. So the best situation is somebody grows with the business. I mean, I grew with the business a lot as a first-year CEO, second-year CEO, and a leader as well. I had no leadership skills prior to that. Built my leadership skills up. So that's ideal. But, you're always, as a CEO, when we had hundreds and hundreds of employees, I was hiring hundreds of people, I would assess each person on an individual basis. Is this person progressing? Are they a long-term fit? Are they growing with the company? Happy to offer them a pay raise. And typically in that rate, they're more loyal. They have more knowledge of the company, less of a training issue, less risk, of them having a great CV, but then you see they're not as qualified. And also from a pay perspective, it's a lot less than going out and hiring somebody outside. You generally have some cost savings there. So I always like to maintain an employee through their growth cycle. But if I feel like that person is just not a fit, I have to cut them loose, unfortunately, and find talent. And as the company is growing and making more money, you have a bigger budget to hire appropriate talent.
So how do you know when is the problem that the problem is your resources, your employees, and not the business itself? You might say, oh, my employees are not doing good enough, but maybe it's your business that's not doing good enough. How do you know which one is which?
Yeah, I mean, how do you know which one is which is you have a good pulse on your own business. Yeah, you have this vision. I think the best business owners are the greatest visionaries, and they feel they're in tune with the business. It's really an intuition that you build. We were talking about Steve Jobs. He knows every inch of his business. He owns everything. And I give an example all the time is if you own a business, you're the captain of your ship. You're CEO of the business, you're the captain of your ship. And as a captain of your ship, you know your deckhands, you know all of the portions of your ship. You know where there's leaking water into your ship as well and where to plug. And you have this feeling of just assessing all areas of your business, its strengths, its opportunities, the direction it's heading, all of the factors, all of the crew. And you're just on a high level, have this high level vision and awareness, which I think is required to be a high level operator, especially with more people and more employees comes more problems, more risks and more threats.
I believe you see something that most of your colleagues or subordinates don't see.
Yes.
Like you have that vision that they don't see it.
Yes.
And if they don't see it, it's very hard to communicate with them.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah. And that's developed. That was certainly developed over time. But the ability to like see from a high level was something that I think is very powerful for any business owner to see everything, to see all the plays. I use like an example a lot as well is like when people are driving, a lot of times they're just driving their car like this and they're just looking like here. It freaking pisses me off. Because like the best drivers are marked back, okay, they're driving, but you're kind of seeing your peripherals. You're seeing what's on the side. You know, you're not paying attention to it, but it's there. And it is the same in business. And business is literally the same way. And in every opportunity, there's peripheral opportunities right around you, right in front of you. You can meet the right person that'll change your life. You can say the right, you know, you can, you know, bring up the right conversation or the right opportunity to the right person, and it can change everything for you. But most people are just looking here. And this is, I think, one of the biggest things that I really encourage people to build this awareness, this ability to scan everything around them, both in personal, business, relations, everything. And the amount of opportunities at the top of the funnel increases considerably when you open up the vision.
How do you go about finding the right people for your team?
For sure. I mean,
is it like you find it LinkedIn? Is it you find it through mutual friends? Mm. Is it through Upwork, Fiverr?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what is exactly, where do you find those people?
Yeah. Well, as the, how you find people for a business changes in the different levels of the business and where it's at. So if you're a startup, like if you're completely a startup, you can pretty much hire most people with a little bit of experience or relevant experience because your budgets are lower, right? But as your budgets increase, you're going to want people that are hyper-specialized in a specific industry or specific area with proven results over a long period of time. So I look for certain skills. So at this stage of the company, I'm looking for something completely different than it was 5 years ago. But yeah, I mean, the best resources we used in the early stages, Upwork was really good. So if you're a startup new, Upwork and Fiverr are excellent because
Okay. They're
really good to be scrappy and cheap, and you get a lot more talent and a lot more bang for your buck. On the highest levels, you're going to use LinkedIn and maybe Wellfound, so the higher levels.
It's interesting. For my field of work in media, I tend to find that in mutual friends was the easiest way to find the high quality of videographers, video editors. When I went to LinkedIn, it was the worst of finding those quality people that I need to make those quality content.
Yes.
You know, it's not that easy also in the media world to find the person that can really get the quality that you're looking for. There's a lot of copycatters.
Right.
You copy the same exact format, the same form, the same content. But you're looking for that special quality person who knows how to get the camera angles in a certain way, that knows how to edit the videos in a way that you feel like, wow, this guy knows how to edit really well.
Yeah.
So mine was through mutual friends more than anything else.
Good to know. Yeah, it's different. And I think our industries are very different in tech. But I would agree. I think that probably mutual friends would be a very good way in this space.
Absolutely. Now, coming for the audience, maybe something that we can give and share them some advice. What is something about making money that nobody talks about?
When you make more money, you have, unfortunately, to be cautious of a lot more things. So more money is more problems, like Biggie said. And it's very true. And I didn't understand this when I was young. I did like more money and more problems. Like, no way. You know, when I was poor, I didn't understand this, but it's really true. Because with more money comes more, you know, bad actors in your life, threat risks. You know, you can go to a room, somebody could be bugging you and trying to manipulate you in some way. You have to watch your jewelry, where you're traveling.
You become a target.
It's a target. And if somebody knows, for example, let's say, I mean, in Dubai, obviously, we're safe, but like somebody knows I have certain watches or whatever the case may be, and I'm in some little hotel room in I don't know, Europe somewhere, and I post it on a story and I'm staying there a few days, that's a risk I just added to myself because somebody knows that they can take me for, you know, 100K or whatever for a watch, and they know where I'm staying. Now, I have to think about it. So even when I'm posting online, I'm risk aware. I'm assessing risk. And you're adding an extra factor. Now I'm, you know, going on social media saying I built a $15 million tech company. I ended up like a cursor. It fucking pisses me off because I don't want to have to put that out there. You have to put it out there for socials and people to understand.
So people can see the value in you.
Yes.
In a way.
Yeah.
As unfortunate as it is, they see the monetary value of you.
Yes.
But this is how the world works. They see your net worth. And when they see your net worth, then they see your value.
That's right. Yeah.
So what about the one financial mistake that can destroy success?
Financial mistake. Biggest financial mistake was not diversifying. I really like to diversify assets. I'm a big believer in having different asset pools and different things. So that's one of them. But I had to say the one financial mistake. One financial mistake is, I haven't had any massive ones. I don't know, I say just not diversifying your assets.
What about if someone who wants this financial freedom? What's their first step?
First step? Well, there's a lot of steps you make. The first step, at least for me, is building a skill set, figuring out what you're good at and building yourself and building the skill sets to provide. Even before you find a mentor or somebody else, you have to have some value first to provide. You know, so even working at McDonald's or doing these different things, you build skills. So go out there and build skills, build varying skill sets. And then once you have those skill sets to add to the market, you can figure out how to add value. So just building your own skill sets.
When you told to go find a mentor, usually when I think of like, how could I add a value to a mentor when I'm seeking to learn from a mentor other than the monetary value? So what kind of else things that I can do for a mentor?
Yeah.
Other than money.
Yeah. So for a mentor, what does a mentor need? Well, it comes down to a very simple question, right? It's always a good question. And think about scanning this person. What do they need? Spending really, really good time to understand this person deeply. What is it that they need? Do they need more, you know, guests on their podcast as an example? Do they need some kind of service? Do they need you to shine their shoes? I don't know. Like, you have to spend that time, right?
So yes, get to know more about that person.
Get to know more about that person. And you don't have to really spend the time directly with them to get to know them. You can go on, watch all their podcasts, watch their social media and understand, okay, this is what they need. And then give them a concise thing like, hey, I follow you. This is what, you know, what I can provide for you. So figuring out what that person, you could be delivering their food every day. You know what I mean? Something.
Find a way to add their value, no matter what.
Correct.
Correct. Wonderful. What about the difference between making money and building wealth? What is the difference between that?
Making money is temporary. So it really pisses me off when I hear guys that are just trying to make quick cash on a, you know, on a crypto pump, and that all well and good, but that will go away. You know, I can make $1 million and lose it, you know, very quickly, you know, through lifestyle and through, you know, investments and things like that. But building wealth is generational, and building wealth is something you keep. And also building wealth is a mindset. Because if you take away my company now, my back would be against the wall. And I would go back to that same young kid who didn't have anything and have that mindset of, I will fight like freaking hell to make sure I get it back. And I still have the skills within me to be able to achieve it again. So if you take away this company, I will achieve millions of dollars. It's just a matter of when. It's not a matter of if I will achieve millions of dollars and get millions of dollars. It's a matter of when I will achieve it. So this is the difference between making money and getting lucky maybe on some small venture versus building building a business and building wealth, because it's the skill sets and who you become along the way. And for me, I'm a big believer that this is the real value, and this is the real value of life, not what money could buy you.
I'm smiling right now because it reminds me of something they said, like the hardest challenge you can possibly have right now is to build that first $1 million. But once you have that first $1 million, it becomes easier to build multiple millions figures.
Yes.
Do you think that's true?
Yes. The first, I would say the first 100K took me a long time.
Okay.
The first 100K took a long time. Even the first 10K, the first 100K. Now I see kids who are like 19 making 100K. It blows my mind.
I'm surprised. Like, there are some people who are 25-year-old. I don't know if you heard of Samuel Onaha, I think.
Yeah.
He's like living a lavish lifestyle right now.
He's 25?
Yeah, I think, yeah, he's 25, but he looks older than that. Yeah. He's 25 years old.
Crazy.
He's like private jets going all around. Ecom with his Icon clothing brand that he has in Amsterdam. So yeah, it's like he's doing a lot of things.
Yeah, no, more power to these people. You know what I mean? Like, listen, like if you do it early, good for you. You know, you're going to get tested in life. And I wish these people well, honestly. I really do wish these people well. It took a little bit longer for some of us. Very grateful to be here, man. I'm grateful for the long journey, and delayed gratification is actually a very good thing. Like, in hindsight, if I was a multimillionaire in 20 or 25, like, I would lose the taste of things very quickly.
So you think that it's like you finished the video game and you clocked everything?
Bro, like, I retired in May. So for my birthday, I retired and I had this big retirement party. I lost my job on my birthday.
Okay.
Like, on my
birthday. You fire yourself.
I got fired. I feel like I was the best script again. I got fired. And I had the yacht for, my closest friends, my mom, my close friends were all there. It was like this amazing moment. So for like rewarding yourself from 20 years ago, working at McDonald's, you know, making $6.15 an hour to building, you know, a multi 8-figure company and retiring on your fucking terms. This is like the freaking best thing ever 20 years later. So I celebrated that.
And it's even amazing that you retired 24 years earlier than most people who retire at 60 years old.
Yeah.
So you're 24 years ahead.
Yeah. But I learned a lot. So like that summer, I went and I traveled. I was in Eastern Europe. I went to Croatia and I had a villa there, and I was just chilling, living the retired life. And it was the best and worst thing ever. So I was a retired multimillionaire. I had, all the time and the money to do whatever I wanted. And honestly, I was miserable. I realized that it's not about having the things and the freedom and all this stuff is all well and good. But freedom without purpose is very empty. So I had the freedom to wake up when I want, do what I want, go where I want. I could fly wherever. And retiring as a multimillionaire in my 30s was not nearly as fulfilling as I expected it to be. And that's why I keep this stick around. That's why I keep this stick and this eagle is a representation of never retiring. This is a symbol of retirement, but it's actually for me a good reminder. That's why I'm bringing on this podcast today. It's a symbol of never retiring. That retiring is a myth. And as men especially, we're always working and learning and growing in some capacity.
I think now you're retired from striving for money, but more so striving for purpose and contribution.
Yes.
That's what I see right now, which is a wonderful moment of gratification that you feel you're blessed to have this certain opportunity that many people don't have. And you built yourself to reach to that level.
Inshallah.
Which you should be very proud of yourself. At 36 years old, very proud of yourself.
Should be.
Now, for the audience that are looking to master this world that you have been, what is that one skill that if they mastered it, they will definitely become a successful entrepreneur?
Yeah. There's many skills, but if I had to give you one that I felt was the most important is awareness.
Awareness.
And building this self-awareness, especially building this relationship with yourself and this awareness, and not looking for other people outside to solve your own problem. We all deal with our own challenges every single day. You might be dealing with some level of something inside that's bothering you, some sadness, some some challenge, and that's okay. But being deeply resolute with yourself, deeply understanding yourself and being awareness of yourself, awareness of your surroundings, awareness of opportunities, awareness of threats. And this is, I think, one of the best skills that many people haven't really refined. They spend their whole lives with themselves and they don't really understand themselves. So how do you develop that? Well, being intentional, I think, is very important. Journaling. I spend a lot of time journaling on a weekly basis or writing down where I'm at.
Do that every day?
I try to do it every day. I can't tell you I do it every day. I wish I did. That'd be bullshit if I told you that. But for sure, every week. Every week, a few times a week, I journal. But then once a week, I do a weekly assessment of yourself and your progress, strengths, opportunities.
All right. Now, if you go back to your younger self, what would be that one piece of advice you would give to him? To Adam, young 18-year-old or 20-year-old?
You're exactly where you need to be. You're exactly where you need to be and love yourself. Because often we're very hard on ourselves. We're so difficult on ourselves. You know, we don't have the things that we see online on social media, and you see all these guys flashing and their nice stuff, but you don't know the freaking road it took to get there. So love yourself, appreciate yourself. You're exactly where you need to be, and figuring out your next moves is going to be the real journey. So deeply assess yourself and build that relationship with yourself, but it's okay where you're at. And, you know, find your people, find your crew, as well, but never forget about yourself. That's who you really need.
Well, my friend, you shared a lot of amazing advice right through this podcast. Now, where could people find you exactly so they can contact you if they needed something?
Absolutely, brother. It's been an honor. Honestly, it's been an honor. It's fun. It's a great conversation. Really grateful to be here. So I live in Dubai. So always doing, you know, meetups and things. You can find me here in Dubai. On Instagram is the primary channel, at Life on Your Terms. I'm sorry, at Life with Nas on Instagram.
Life with Nas.
Yeah.
L-I-F-E.
Yeah.
With
N-A-S. N-A-S. Yeah. Nas is my token logo I keep everywhere. I even have it within all this year as well. So this is like a short for Nasser. So Life with Nas, and also on YouTube as well.
Thank you very much for being here, Adam. Really appreciate that.
My pleasure, brother.
Thank you.